What if I told you that there is an entire sector of the economy run by people who are working diligently to get inside your head and harvest your attention? Well, if that sounds kind of creepy, you know these guys. Call them the attention merchants. Anyone whose business model consists of attracting your attention and then reselling it for profit. Think ad-based TV channels, clickbait producers, celebrities, and of course the big social media companies, Facebook, Instagram, etc. Legal scholar Tim Wu is the author of The Attention Merchants, The Epic Scramble to Get Inside Our Heads. He told Steve Paulson, it is impossible to ignore this stuff.
You know, there are people who sort of think they're immune to advertising. They have this magical power to disregard it. Yet I think that charitably can be said to be fooling yourselves. But there's something more profound going on, which is the media, the things in our lives are designed to advertise to us. So, you know, television shows are written around the commercial break. Or, you know, the internet sites are designed to keep you clicking and clicking and clicking. Maybe you would prefer a different kind of experience, but the business model depends on you clicking. So everything in our life becomes warped so that we can be kind of presented on a silver platter for advertisers. There's no way to ignore this unless you live in the desert as a complete hermit. It affects your life very profoundly. Many of us, I think, feel it in the sense that, you know, we're always distracted. I don't know if you've had this experience. You sit down, you want to write an email, 4 hours go by, you've clicked on a thousand sites. You just like,
yep.
A huge amount of our life now is becoming designed like a casino where you're meant to sort of just keep clicking away or watching away or something, sort of lose control of yourself and hours go by, which can cost you a lot in terms of what you really wanted to do, but it delivers marginal extra revenue. So the casino effect, I think, has a huge impact on our life and I think contributes to us feeling out of control.
Now, back in 1971, the economist Herbert Simon developed the idea of an attention economy, and he noticed this new phenomenon of information overload, and he pointed out that a wealth of information creates a poverty of attention. So 45 years later, with the advent of the internet, we're well beyond a wealth of information, aren't we? It's more like a superabundance of information.
I mean, the dude was right. He saw it. And when I read that, I was like, holy cow, this guy could really see the future. You know, we're in a soup. And it has meant that for almost everything, you know, a new product, a new movie, a political campaign, everything begins with getting attention before the kind of competition on the merits. So it has, in some ways, attention become the currency of our times. It's one of the reasons celebrities are so valuable. You cannot do anything, get a cause started, without attaching a celebrity to it. So you at least get some attention to it, and then people can think, do I really want to give to these refugees or to this orphanage or something? You know, it's become, as he said, 45 years ago, the scarcest thing and therefore the most valuable thing.
So if we put this in some historical perspective, can you go back in history and sort of pick out who the first attention merchant was?
Yes. I name as the first attention merchant Benjamin Day, who was the founder of the New York Sun, which was the first newspaper to really make a go of selling itself for very cheap. It was just a penny press. And attract a huge audience and resell them. The only problem with that model, it generated enormous audiences and was very successful, it's low price, is that Benjamin Day soon found that to compete, he had to run crazier, more lurid, more spectacular stories. And so with the rise of the first attention merchant came the first ethical questions as to what do you do to get attention, a problem which still haunts our present times.
So what kinds of stories did he run?
Well, you see, he began to face a competitor in the New York Herald, another newspaper which specialized in murder, mayhem, and other forms of violent crime. So his great stroke of genius was to begin basically making up stories. One of the most notable examples is he ran a long series of discoveries of what had been seen on the moon by the world's largest telescope. Among other things, he discovered man bats who apparently were fond of fornication with each other, huge giant trees. And he just ran this as news. People went crazy. They're like, wow, that's what's on the moon? Incredible. never printed the retraction, never even hinted that it might have not been true. And so that sort of showed the early perils of journalism. If you have a business model that depends on attracting people, the race is almost always to the bottom.
And what you're saying is, I mean, the new business model here was, instead of the old thing of, you know, you make your money by the price of the subscription, here you're practically giving it away for free, but you're getting a massive amount of readers, and therefore, you know, through advertising, you can make your money.
That's the trick. And I want to say, in our times, since then until now, we have an incredible weakness for free stuff.
So one of the popular tricks for internet companies, or really any company on the web, is to get your attention through clickbait. Can you explain how this works?
You know, the currency of the realm is the click. And clickbait, which was invented early 2000s, is stuff which is only interested in the click and only interested then in making you share it later and not particularly interested in any other goal. When you think about what the media could be, it's frankly a pretty low goal. We want you to click, and maybe we want you to be so aroused or interested that you share. And it's like we have the greatest minds of our generation are working on those goals. And sometimes I think, like, oh my goodness, we really have wasted the last decade if that's what we're trying to do. But, you know, fortunes depend on that particular act. We used to think about the competition for ratings as being this incredibly degrading thing that force people to run the worst television. But the competition for clicks has made the competition for ratings look dignified in comparison. Because at least you had to, you know, have people sit there watching your television show. The click is just like a tiny microsecond of attention. It harnesses the lowest parts of the brain and is really sort of a degrading thing to aim for.
It does make you wonder if these people who are sort of the masters of clickbait are kind of, I don't know, they have a pipeline into the neuroscience of how our brains work and, you know, what we pay attention to.
I mean, I think they absolutely do, not by being neuroscientists, but by testing and discovering that cats activate certain neurons and dogs another one, and, you know, stories about celebrities, a whole nother series. I think when you get down to it, Jonah Peretti, who invented BuzzFeed, has always been interest at some level at the science of just making people click on stuff, no matter how weird or ridiculous or nonsensical it is. That just fascinates him. And his whole career has just been like, what can I do that might make people click?
And he was at Huffington Post, right, first. I mean,
yeah, he was one of the founders. He was one of the founders of the Huffington Post. I think Huffington Post, you know, had some noble ideas, but also pioneered clickbait when it needed to, and has really gone in some unfortunate directions.
Well, and then he came up with sort of this whole idea of, you know, how do you make stuff on the internet go viral? You know, how do you make it contagious? What did he discover?
You know, strongly linked, the clickbait and the viral content idea. He discovered through enormous amounts of experimentation that there's just some stuff that people feel compelled to forward, usually stuff that has a very arousing emotion, like you're outraged or it's hilarious or it's incredibly cute, some very basal kind of emotion that forces you almost involuntarily to think, I got to share this with my friends. And so, you know, he built a business, BuzzFeed, which is just based on trying to find that emotion, isolate it, and send it on.
And so the way clickbait works is, I mean, these companies make money just by the number of clicks and the number of shares. And it doesn't matter how long you actually spend with the content. It's just that the click is the ticket to actually making money.
Right. I mean, it's an example of the metric dominating everything. People have tried to introduce other metrics, but no one's really gotten away from the click as the dominant metric. And so it's like ratings, the goal becomes maximizing it. Now, before I get too depressing on this, I think there have been some alternatives that have, in our time, that have shown more hope. But I think the metric of the click has certainly made the web what it is.
What do you see as promising points of resistance to all of this?
The Attention Merchants, my book, chronicles these long cycles of revolt. And I think we've seen the rise over the last 5 years of paid models, subscription models, by people who just can't take it anymore. And the most prominent example, frankly, is Netflix, along with HBO Go and I guess Amazon, other companies, who have started offering the opposite. The re-rise of television, kind of surprising, is a commercial free product, where as opposed to like clicking around and touching 50 things at once and coming out of feeling like, what was that? Is you sort of sit down and you have a complete story and there's no commercial advertising and people often turn off the lights and very serious. So companies like Netflix, which have been selling the exact opposite mental state, have done very well. And I think it's a reaction, frankly, to the rise of the clickbait.
Tim Wu is the author of The Attention Merchants, the epic scramble to get inside our heads. He talked with Steve Paulson.